So over the years, the great master Ma has directly or indirectly appeared in Taisho. Last year, he told the layman Pong he'd show him the one who does not keep company with the 10,000 things after the layman swallowed all the water in the West River in a single gulp. The great Ma sent some of his students to the slippery slopes of Sher Toa's Dharma, and he was the teacher of Nan Chuan Bai Zhang, Ma Ku, and another 85 to 125 Dharma heirs. He and Sher Tao are the fountainheads of what we call Zen. His teaching style was immediate, and he used whatever was at hand, even as students' nostrils, to present the great sky of mind. During his lifetime, if a student didn't go west of the river to meet Ma Tzu and or south of the lake to see Sher To, he or she was not considered a serious Zen practitioner. We only meet Ma Tzu twice in the Gateless Gate, both times when he is responding to the "What is Buddha?" query. Once he said, "Not mind, not Buddha." The other time he said, "This very mind is Buddha." We, however, meet his Dharma heirs and their heirs numerous times in the Gateless Gate and the Blue Cliff Record. We meet them with Bai Zhang's fox, with Nan Chuan's ordinary mind as the Tao, when Kui Shan kicks over the water bowl, and of course with Zhao Zhou's Mu. We also meet Ma Tzu and his descendants in the Blue Cliff Record, the Book of Equanimity, and Entangling Vines. His dialogues and sermons are well represented in the literature, and I thought it'd be fun for us to spend a week with him, although a week is far too short a time to truly meet this great worthy, our ancestor. So Ma Tzu lived in the 9th century, and after practicing and ordaining, he made his way to live, work, and study with Nan Hu Hui Qiong. At one point during his training, Ma Tzu left the other monks and went to live at a smaller temple where he practiced seated meditation throughout the day and well into each night. Recognizing something in the young man, his teacher Hui Zhang went to him and asked, and this is case 147 from Entangling Vines, Zen Koans of the Shuman Kato Shu, translated by Thomas Kirshner. The teacher asked, "Worthy monk, why do you sit in meditation?" And at this time, although Ma Tzu had already been practicing for many years, he was still rather young in the Dharma, and he said, "I wish to become a Buddha." Thereupon, his teacher picked up a tile and started to rub it against a stone in front of Ma Tzu's hermitage. Ma Tzu asked him what he was doing, and the teacher replied, polishing it so that it will become a mirror. "How can a tile become a mirror through polishing?" asked Ma Tzu. The teacher responded, "How can you become a Buddha through sitting meditation?" Ma Tzu asked, "Then what should I do?" And the teacher replied, "It's like riding in a cart. If the cart doesn't move, do you hit the cart or do you hit the ox?" Ma Tzu had no reply. The teacher continued, "Are you practicing seated meditation? Are you practicing to be a seated Buddha? As for seated meditation, meditation isn't limited to sitting or lying down. As for being a seated Buddha, Buddha isn't limited to any fixed form. In the non-abiding Dharma, you should neither grasp nor reject. If you sit to be a Buddha, you simply kill the Buddha. If you cling to the sitting posture, you will never realize the essential principle. When he heard this, Matsu felt as though he had just partaken of the finest ghee. So case 147 ends there, but the dialogue continued with Matsu questioning, "Well, how shall I do Zazen in order to merge with the formless?" And the teacher said, "Your study of the teaching of the mind ground is like planting seeds. My expounding the essence of reality is like moisture from the sky. Circumstance has come together for you, so you shall see the way." Matsu asked, "If the way is not color or form, how can I see it?" The teacher said, "The reality eye of the mind ground can see the way. Formless absorption is also like this." Matsu asked, "Is there becoming and decay or not?" And the teacher said, "If one sees the way as becoming and decaying, compounding and scattering, that is not really seeing the way. Listen to my verse. Mind ground contains various seeds. When there is moisture, all of them sprout. The flower of absorption has no form. So, what becomes and what decays?" So the dialogue goes on for about 10 more pages, but I thought maybe I would stop right there. You hear some resonance maybe with Nan Chuan and Zhao Zhou's "Ordinary Mind is the Tao." I would think that's exactly so, since Nan Chuan was a student of Matsu. So the initial question of the teacher was, "Why do you sit in Zazen?" Or another translation is, "What is your purpose in doing Zazen?" Or, "What are you going to accomplish by sitting like that?" Matsu said, "I seek to become a Buddha." When we seek to become, we miss what is vividly apparent. You miss what is looking from your eyes and chewing with your teeth. It is like wandering in the early dawn mist, searching for the mountain that you are already walking on. "I want to become" not only denies the one sitting here right now, it then misjudges and misperceives all of us surrounding you. It lets no one and nothing be what it actually is. It misses dawn's pink finger painting the sky. It misses the gathas of geese flying south. And it misses the elk's faint yodel as the sun recedes behind the dike. "When I wish to become, I ignore you and you and you. When I seek to become, subject, object, and activity are concretized, blocking the natural movement of the sun, moon, and the stars. It inhibits the native migration of bear, deer, and cats. It impedes the song of birds, the rustling of wind, and the twirling of aspen leaves. Just sitting with Mu, just sitting as Mu is enough. You just sitting in who hears, just sitting with and as sounds is enough. You just sitting with each number as each number allows you to drop any idea or hope or desire to reach number 10. You are you. And you are enough. Of course, we all want to become. That is a large part of the American dream. But when you come to the Zendo door with your first bow, drop that dream. And then with your second bow to your seat, drop what is still remaining. And with your third bow, drop that and sit down and enjoy the Dharma gate of ease and of spaciousness and of impossibility. When we come to the door, bow, and drop the American dream of becoming, we step into the Buddha dream of unborn and undying, into the dream of no lack and no gain, and of no purity or stain. Each of us has been so conditioned by education, family, and culture that it is easy to see right past who we actually are and are not. It is easy to see right past what and why we are and are not. And with this inculcation, we miss the habituated insistence it demands to stay separate. We are so busy asserting ourselves in this extroverted culture that we hardly notice the energy we are expending. Our behavior and conduct can become a daily grind polishing tiles to make mirrors, of doing zazen to be Buddhas, of practicing to be nicer, happier, and more peaceful. But as Matsu next asks, what is one to do? If sitting zazen to become a Buddha isn't it, if it isn't to be happier and more peaceful, calmer, then what is it for? Do I direct myself or not? Matsu implored, then what should I do? And the teacher said, it is like riding in a cart. If the cart doesn't move, do you hit the cart or do you hit the horse? This is quite a response, isn't it? I find 1,000 years later that I, like Matsu, am speechless. It is like riding in a cart. If the cart doesn't move, do you hit the cart or do you hit the ox? I remember once during a public Dokusan with Eiken Roshi near the end of a long, very hot, the trade winds had stopped blowing for the week. So it was a very hot, stifling session. And a student in this public Dokusan pulled himself in front of Roshi. The student was haggard looking, unshaven, bleary and red-eyed, and exhausted. His clothes were rumpled and white-crusted from sweat. And he pleaded, I've been beating this horse all week, and I am desperately stuck. What should I do? Am I not whipping the horse hard enough? It was a poignant, painful, and impoverished declaration. And I remember it as though it were yesterday, even though really it happened over 25 years ago. After days and days of sitting, after years and years of hour after hour after hour sitting, Matsu begs, what is one to do? And the question, do you beat the ox or the cart, leaves him speechless. It leaves him dumbfounded, stopped, and staggered. And the teacher then said, are you doing zazen or are you sitting as Buddha? Zazen is not just a matter of sitting or lying down. Sitting as Buddha reveals that Buddha has no fixed form. In the midst of transitory things, don't grasp. don't reject. If you keep the Buddha seated, this is murdering the Buddha. If you cling to the form of sitting, you do not adhere to its inner principle. Zazen is not a matter of crossing your legs, sitting straight with your back slightly rounded, the chin tucked in and the diaphragm pulled gently upward by a string. And it is certainly not sitting like a bump on a log. That will not wipe away any beginningless crimes. Zazen is not just a matter of correct form. It is as vast and wide as the blue sky, where clouds rise in the southwest, not necessarily for any reason, float across the sky of mind and disperse in the northeast without you doing anything intentionally. In this way, the clouds have nowhere to stick and leave no traces. This is how you realize. This is how you recognize the Buddha of no form, of no place, and of no time. This is how you touch the Buddha of no eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. This is the Buddha of no color, sound, scent, taste, touch, and so on. This is why what would Buddha do as a behavioral guideline, as a moral compass, is practically useless. It is the wrong question usually asked at exactly the wrong time. In the midst of transitory things, don't grasp or reject. In the vast and wide world of Zazen, why do you put on your rakusu at the sound of the temple bell? This question is a much more advantageous guide to dealing intimately with what is right before you. What would Buddha do? What would Jesus do? What would Muhammad do is a Pandora's box of constricting, unstable walls that lead only to confusion. What would you do when you are simply you to the bottomless bottom? That is the real nexus of practice. That is the core of Bodhi Mandala. If you keep the Buddha seated, if you keep the Buddha as an idea, if you keep the Buddha as a regulator of activity, you are murdering the Buddha. And as importantly, or even more so, you are murdering yourself and those living and dying beings around you. Let's not do to the Buddha what some have done and are doing to Jesus. Let's not do to the Buddha what some are doing and have done to Allah. And if this sounds a little bit like a rant, my apologies. But that is my response to a policy, to a recommendation of behavior at a local place of practice. What would Buddha do? Maybe a good title for a pop book, but it is a lazy, hackneyed slogan for guiding a Zen center and for instructing students. So what should you do when you're sitting? And the teacher said, if you cling to the form of sitting, if you cling and hold on to any one thing, you are not aware of its inner principle. Things are not permanent. They are not substantial, and they are not independent. They are instead each one of them expressions of intimacy. Each one, each thing is calling. Each is yearning for you to let go. to relinquish our fixed notions, ideas, our common constancies, and meet wholeheartedly instead what is right before our eyes and what is right before our ears and before nose, tongue, body, mind. It is right here, as the gentle wind blows through alder trees. It is that, here, now. And on hearing the teacher's words, Matsu felt as though he were drinking ambrosia, or as another translation has, as though he were tasting ghee. And fortunately, Matsu wasn't completely satisfied with the taste. And so he asked another question. He said, how shall I do zazen in order to merge with the formless? And the teacher said, your investigation of the mind ground is like planting seeds. My expounding is like moisture from the sky. Circumstances have come together, so you shall see the way. We do not practice in isolation, ever. The wind teaches the older branches. The sun teaches the roses and the rain, the grass. We take turns investigating and expounding. We take turns showing and perceiving. This is the dance of affinity. This is circumstances coming together. And all you need do is come back. Come back to mu, to hearing, to who, and to each number. Just as the farmer who checks his orchard each day has complete confidence that the fruit will ripen on time, though not necessarily in his time, you too can trust. You too can be confident. Just continue with your zazen, with your sitting, standing, walking, and lying down. And then it isn't if, but simply when. It's simply when the circumstances conspire to bring your fruit to maturation. Matsu still had questions, and he asked, how can I see what has no form? And is there becoming and decay? And the teacher said, I'm paraphrasing here, the true eye of zazen can see the way of color and form. But if one sees decay and beginning, if one sees coming and going, it is not the true eye of zazen. The eye of zazen sees, hears, tastes, smells, and touches the solitary breeze of reality. It sees it in the mountains and valleys as them. It sees it in the rivers and oceans as them. And it sees it in animals and insects and rocks and stones and trees and plants as them. The breeze of reality is solitary, because there is nothing outside of it. It is not hindered by a past, present, or future. There is only this breeze of movement, an ever-unfolding, kaleidoscopic dance of mutual support and co-creation. And like a snake wrapped around its own end, it has no beginning, middle, or termination. And another name for this solitary, always encircling breeze is intimacy. And intimacy means just as you are, containing all things. And it means contained by all things in every single moment, with nothing possibly ever left out.